Well, my name's Dan Robb. I'm a student pastor at Hill Country Bible Church in Georgetown, Texas, just a few hours south of here. This is me with a little bit more facial hair, which had to go. It was getting complicated with an upkeep. And that is my beautiful wife, Heidi, and she was named after the movie, if you're familiar with that, but neither one of us have seen it. Yeah, you love the movie. We're going to have to see it someday, so... This is the pictures of our dogs. These are our kids. We don't have kids yet. But the one on your right is Riley, and she looks like she's had 10 cappuccinos all the time that you see her. So she's just kind of that dog. And this is Ringo, who he's just like a stuffed animal. He looks like that 24/7 there. So great dogs. They don't listen to me. They listen to Heidi. So. This is my website, danrobwrites.com. Basically, I started the website, the blog, if you will, a few months ago. My main goal is really to be of an asset to student pastors, parents, just write articles. I write articles on success. I write articles on how you can be a good youth pastor, things that I've learned, learn from my mistakes. One of the recent articles I wrote was on anxiety. Anxiety is a big problem right now in youth ministry, especially with kids and the pressure on school, and as well as just social pressures. So that's the website. I also write for SpartanAvenue.com. That's a Michigan State blog, but if you don't care about the Spartans, then that's fine. That's okay. We'll be all right. I also wrote a book, by the way, this is for free. So if you do decide you want a copy, feel free to come up and grab one. I haven't made any money on it. I just only lost money. But really, it is many years ago, I struggled with my thought life. It was, I had a very negative attitude. I had anxiety. I would get panic attacks. I had depression. I had all these things. And finally, God one day just said, just reminded me of Philippians 4:8. And I started reading that verse and I thought, I wonder if I actually applied this to my life and my thought life, if I could change things. And so, my life started to change, and so I wanted to share that with you all. If you want an electronic version, it is available on Amazon for free. If you do the Kindle or if you do the Nook, it's on Barnes & Noble for free as well. Again, my main goal isn't to just really to help you all, just to provide resources for everyone. Well, if you live in a metro area or if you live in a rural area, you might not see this as much, but definitely, since we're close to Austin, we see this all the time. If you're in Dallas or Fort Worth area, you'll probably see these people. They'll be wearing their skinny jeans. They'll be on their phone, as I have my phone here, you know, all the time, looking at something, not engaging. I love it when I see students on their phone and just kind of communicating to one another via text. I'm always like, you could just look up and look at each other, but no, they don't do that. It's just so easy. Technology has made it so easy. And really with students, you know, a lot of the millennials, or if you will, Generation Z that's in high school right now, a lot of them have grown up watching movies or learned to be distracted. So the iPhone is now, or whatever phone you have, is really the key for them. And it almost feeds into that even more. But they are different. They like to rent. They love to rent their apartments from cars. If you see those little smart cars, I've seen a lot of big cities will have those smart cars, they'll rent those. They will also rent people. There's I guess it's an app or a website called TaskRabbit, and they will rent people to help them do whatever project it is that they need to do. It's so interesting. In a lot of ways, they are cutting edge, and in some ways, they definitely need a lot of help and work there. There are approximately 80 million millennials or generation, actually millennials, in the United States. And there is 14.6 millennials in the UK. This is a huge graphic here, a huge demographic. Oftentimes when we think of millennials, we think of people that want a handout. You know, a student like this student here, traveling around the world without money, please support my trip. There is a website called GoFundMe. And I had a student last year who was going to film school in California, and it's $30,000 a year. So he thought he would just do a GoFundMe. And he got like $300. But I just thought as he did that, I thought, you know, you could just work for this. You know, you could just. And he is working, but it's kind of the mentality of millennials, or at least the perception that I know I have for him, and Many people that I've talked to that have a millennials is they don't want to work for it. They want everything handed to them. And I am going to be making a lot of generalizations that are outside of, you know, and so there will be exceptions that are outside of the bell curve, just FYI. Because there are millennials that are going on mission trips, becoming missionaries, so helping out. Yes?
Define the age group for millennials.
Yes, I'm glad. Thank you. Yes. So define the age group on millennials. There's a lot of different people that have different ideas about that. One such man is Elwood, I believe it is Carlson, and he says in his book, The Lucky Few, from 1983 to 2001, that's the gap of millennials. Then after that, you have Generation Z. If you talk to other people, you'll get another you know, stat. So it really is kind of a who do you talk to. But generally, it's 80s, 90s, and early 2000s that are the millennials out there. By 2030, millennials will outnumber boomers by 22 million. It's really amazing when you think about that. And just the kind of impact, not just socially, culturally, but religiously, how they have already had an impact and how they are going to have even a greater impact in the world. There was a lady who is works for the CNN. She wrote an article on millennials a couple of years ago, but so true. She said, time and again, the assumption among Christian leaders and evangelical leaders in particular is that the key to drawing 20-somethings back to church is simply to make a few style updates, edgier music, more casual services, a coffee shop in the fellowship hall, a pastor who wears skinny jeans, I really don't want to see that site, an updated website that includes online giving. A lot of those are great, they're awesome things. Believe me, the coffee in the coffee shop, you know, that's great for at church, you know, let's be honest. Online giving, it makes it easier. However, when this lady gave this presentation, there was a pastor who raised his hand and said, so what you're saying is I just need to have edgier music, or worship team needs to do this. And she wrote in her article, she just wanted to beat her head against the pulpit there because she thought, well, you guys aren't getting it. And so she did go on to say about millennials, but here's the thing, having been advertised for their whole life, they're impressed. We're impressed with consumerism and performances. And in fact, they've grown to have sort of a radar for people's opinion if it's not being sincere. She says, in fact, I would argue that church as performance is just one more thing driving us away from the church and evangelicalism in particular. It's kind of a scary thought if you think about it. And we'll talk a little bit later about really where evangelicals are going. I'm not evangelicals, but millennials are going to church. And it was really quite surprising to me. But even though all seems like it's like we're never going to be able to reach them, or we're not going to be able to, you know, whatever, all things are possible with God. I love that. It just is. God can do anything, and he can even use us. And I'll give some tips, some strategies that you can implement in your life that are fairly simple. But if you just implement them, you will start to see and attract possibly millennials to your church. You will also start to have conversations that you didn't have, think you would have before. I love that verse, Matthew chapter 19, verse 23, that then Jesus said to the disciples, assuredly, because they were talking about the rich young ruler, and they thought, what in the world? Who can get saved? And so Jesus says, I say to you that it's hard for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven. And again, I say to you, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. When the disciples heard it, they were greatly astonished. Who then can be saved? But Jesus looked at them and said to them, with men this is impossible, but with God all things are possible. In the context, he's talking to the rich young ruler there. Millennials, it does seem like, you know, back in Jesus' day, it was if you were blessed with wealth, then you were basically right with God. And so, but with millennials, they've grown up, it is one of the richer, really, generations. They've grown up with wealth, they've grown up with everything. And when you look at them, though, they are spiritually bankrupt, and they do need Jesus Christ. And that's really where, even though we see the problem, and it looks like, oh, wow, how do you train a generation to take ownership of their life, or to work for things, or to know that it's not all going to be handed to you? Well, there's a couple of things that we'll talk about with that. But let's look at the characteristics of millennials. And you have that on your second page of your notes there. I went ahead and gave you all of that so you wouldn't have to basically do fill in the blanks. So, number one, millennials, passion matters to them. Passion just, it matters to them. They need to be passionate about the career that they're going to do. They've heard the stories about people who have worked 30, 40 years and then retired and passed away because they worked their whole life and weren't passionate about the job that they did or they were miserable. So passion really is a high priority. Number two is, or B, is health conscious. They saw the movie Super Size Me by Morgan Spurlock. And in fact, that movie is actually shown in health classes, I know, in California. It's amazing. Basically, a guy takes him 30 days, and for 30 days, he eats nothing but fast food, McDonald's. And when they say, will you supersize me? Would you like to supersize me? He's like, yes, I'll do it. And of course, he gains a lot of weight and, you know, reveals kind of the unhealthiness of fast food, which is a good thing. However, millennials and even Generation Z, many of them are taking it to another step and extreme, which is they'll be vegan, they'll be vegan, vegetarian. Vegan, I believe, is no animal products, and vegetarianism is, you know, I guess there is some in there, but dairy, yeah, they can do dairy. Thank you. What was that? Okay, yeah, they can do fish as well. Also, they want their work and life to align. They want everything to be there. Again, they want to have their passion. They want that to come out in their life. And so if that means that they take a job that's going to be lesser pay, they'll do that because they want that. D, they're very spontaneous. They have spontaneity. I found this true with trying to get volunteer help from millennials. Well, I was going to help out, but they're doing something else now. So it just kind of like they beat to their own drummer there a little bit. But they'll make plans spontaneously or break plans spontaneously. It just was really whatever floats their boat at the moment. They're pragmatic idealists, and that's D. Essentially, they believe in the best, and that's why many of them supported Bernie Sanders. And the rest of us were very thankful we didn't have to feel the burn in the wallet if he was elected as president. So, but they saw the ideal of getting free education, and they thought, yeah, this is it. They saw the same thing with Hillary Clinton. A lot of them were looking at her and going, oh, she's a woman. We want the first woman to be president. So whatever, you know, I guess, way that you swing, you know, they really saw just not the real reality. They saw the ideal of that person, of that candidate, and that really had a big impact. F, they're typically liberal. And in all honesty, one of the things that really I was surprised by is just really how much our educational system has had a huge impact in really taking millennials who grew up in the church, have some family values, and then they get to college, and it just seems like all of that goes out the door. And on all honesty, there's several reasons for that. One is students were never really connected to the church, for one. Maybe there wasn't a youth pastor or program there that they were able to connect with. Maybe they had questions that weren't answered. Often apologetics can be the answer, can be that strengthens a student's faith. Also, though, millennials will get there, and they'll start to see their world in a different way. And if they don't get those questions answered, then they'll say, maybe my professor is right. Maybe there is no God. Or maybe, you know, I've been too legalistic in my life. You know, maybe it's okay to sleep with my girlfriend or sleep with my boy, whatever the case may be. Or they'll see, oh, look, that gay couple, they love each other, so it's okay. And you see that their support in gay marriage as well as support for non-traditional gender roles, especially with the LGBTQ community there. So there's also, they are for legalization of marijuana. They definitely see that. And part of that legalization of marijuana has a lot to do with the anxiety that this generation really feels, mainly because there was a lot of intense pressure just to get the right grade in order to get to the right school, to get the right job, that all of that was placed on them. And again, it's your educational system saying to them, feeding that to them, saying all throughout high school, hey, you got to get to this, you know, 10% percentile range so that you can get into said school that is the dream school of your state there or that you want. So there's a lot of pressure. And again, they are You know, even though they are health conscious, they'll probably go to marijuana, or they might go to Adderall or whatever, you name it. They'll try it. So they typically are liberal. They're progressively in their social issues and generals, as I said. One of the cool redeeming qualities is that they are compassionate. They are very compassionate. In 2006, Harvard did a study between 18 and 25-year-olds, and they found that 74% of them, the number one reason for volunteering was to help others. And that's a really good quality. Even though our perception is, oh, they just want a handout, they really do want to give back and want to help other people. Also in 2006, UCLA did a study, a survey of 26,000 freshmen, and found that two-thirds said that they feel it's essential or very important to help others. And that was the highest mark in 25 years of UCLA doing that survey, possibly more now. They are non-religious. Many of them, that's a growing trend. Over half of millennials polled in the UK, so roughly a little over 7.3 million, said that they had no religion nor attended a place of worship other than a wedding or a funeral. Also, 25% believe in God, while 19% believe in a spiritual greater power. 38% said that they did not believe in God nor any other greater spiritual power. And the poll also found that 41% thought religion is the cause of evil in the world rather than good. That's kind of disturbing, very disturbing.
How many percent?
41%. And again, it is very scary when you think about that and really how the country's going and where we'll be. Lastly but not least, and again, this list isn't all-inclusive. There could be other characteristics you could add in there and should be added. One is impatient. They want it now. And I understand that. They don't want to wait for something. And so credit cards and all of that, it's easy to get into credit card debt. They're also known as a me generation, but I think it's really interesting that they're known as a me generation because I've been hearing that about every generation since the 60s. So I think it's relative. But there are, even though they have these characteristics and some of them are not so much the best qualities or characteristics, there are some redeeming ones. And if we as a church can tap into those characteristics, then there's a strong possibility that we can see a change in momentum from millennials leaving the church and Generation Z possibly leaving the church as well. So how can we engage millennials with church, faith, and God? And I just have some strategies here for you. It's all about relationships. It's all about the relationship that you'll have with them. A lot of these are very across the board. They apply to a lot of different things. But millennials, this is especially more prominent, I would say, because this is a generation that grew up without possibly a dad or a mom. More chances often than not. Mom was working two jobs or dad was working two jobs to raise the kids. So you see this empty vat. And it is a reason why they go to look to their culture or they look to education as being something that can give them wisdom. And so, or they'll look to YouTube or they'll look to all these things. But really, they do actually respect older folks. They look to those older folks as being wiser, being there and seeing there and being it done and done that. So there's a huge respect factor in that. They do want to be mentored, definitely. They do seek that out. Now, again, you're talking about millennials, and so they tend to also be flaky. So when I say they do want a mentor, they do. And that's really where, if you were to engage them in a mentorship, that's where you could actually challenge them and really help them out. They definitely need that. I would suggest more church dinners. And I know I love food. And I'll tell you, what I've found at church dinners is that there's this intergenerational that can happen. And students can see, as well as adults can see. And I think it's equally important for adults to see that millennials or even students, they're not just a bunch of germs or sticky fingers that are going to get on you. You know, they're actually, they're people, and they can be a great addition in your church, and they can really help. So I would just encourage you, the church dinner, it's great. Fellowship around food, it's so awesome. Also incorporate intergenerational small groups or community groups or whatever kind of groups you do. One of the things that I did, Arch Rutherford, I worked with him for a number of years, and one of the things they had at his church was they called it salt and pepper dinners, And you can call it whatever dinners you want to call it, but I love the idea because they had everybody sign up, and then they basically matched intergenerational people together, and then they met at a host home. And it was a great way. Sometimes they played games if the host wanted to do that, but people just had to bring a side dish. And I remember when I went there and I didn't know anybody, or I saw all these adults that I would see them at church and they would be all dressed up or whatever, I was able to get to know them. And it really helped me connect with the church. And so that's why I say, you know, if you have millennials in your church, definitely involve food. If you're doing that, maybe do a little bit more of that. Everyone's going to be happy, so just FYI. They want to get involved in their community. And this is what I've mentioned several times with the whole of the statistics of UCLA and also Harvard doing those, about 74% feeling it very important to give back. They want to get involved. They want to feel like they're making a difference. And this is where you as a church, you can program activities for them to do that. Possibly give back to a soup kitchen, possibly help through a small group, help somebody that can't cut their lawn, help them do that. Help somebody paint their house. These are small things, but millennials, they want to feel like they're doing something. One church I saw, they took the church grounds. They had so much church grounds, they turned part of it into a garden. I thought this was a really creative idea just because they took the food to the community and just involved that. Millennials are very sensitive to that. They want that sense of community, again, because they're coming from divorced homes. They're coming from that background, so they want to feel that sense of community. They don't want to go to church and then just leave, although they may do that because they don't know anyone. So if they do that and you're seeing that, try to think and strategize about some ways you can incorporate them in there. And by the way, the church garden thing, not only will you incorporate your other people there, but you will start to get a reputation and name in your community. And it won't be just one of, well, they believe this. They'll see, hey, that's a church that really gives back. Or that's a church that has, you know, a 4th of July party to come and just celebrate. You know, it's a great way to get. And again, these are a lot of things that are social things that we're doing, that I'm talking about doing. But they just give you an opportunity to engage your community and engage millennials, engage Generation Z. And it's a great way to do that. Just begin a dialogue about theology. I'm sorry, see it down here. Is be authentic, be yourself. That's so key. And that was the thing that I mentioned earlier about the Rachel Held Evans quote, was that she just felt basically they were being superficial. So be yourself, be who you are. You know, be authentic. If wearing a suit and tie is you, wear a suit and tie. You know, please don't wear skinny jeans. If your thing is you wear sandals like me. You know, whatever it is you do, do that. Be authentic. Don't try to be something you're not, because they will sense that and they know. They'll know right away. Me, I'm not going to even try and grow my hair because it's all gone. I waved goodbye a long time ago. Be grounded in your faith. Be grounded in your faith. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15 says, "But sanctify the Lord God in your hearts, and always be ready to give a defense to everyone who asks you a reason for the hope that is in you with meekness and fear." So true. You ought to be ready to give that defense. Now, oftentimes what happens is that I'm too ready to give the defense, and I become like E. Begin a dialogue, but listen. I so often want to get my right answer in there, and I don't always hear what really is going on. And so allow them to speak. You know, this is a generation that has been talked at their whole life, from their parents to possibly in their educational system. So have a dialogue. If you're going to have a dialogue with somebody and you're going to ask their opinion about, well, why do you believe in same-sex marriage, let them finish speaking and say, okay, you believe this. Well, how about this? And get them to kind of see it in a different way. Once you have allowed them to speak, and especially if you've gained their trust, which is really huge, then now your opinion or your voice from the Bible is going to be heard. It's not going to be heard because they're so used to Christians being this way over here. And so they may have a preconceived notion about you. So you got to kind of strike that and just allow them to speak, gain their trust, and when you do, they're definitely going to hear. They'll at least give you an audience. And Paul did use that technique, a little bit in Acts 17. So engage them in dialogue. Accept them, number F, accept them, accept and love them for who they are. And again, I've made so many times reference to this, but this is a generation that has grown up not feeling unconditional love. They probably haven't felt that. Most of them have grown up, again, like I said, in maybe a divorced home or a home where both parents are working and busy. And so this is really where the free grace message of in faith alone and Christ alone really comes to light and really shines, and where we as a movement can actually help students, Generation Z and millennials. If they sense that, know that we love them by how much, maybe by what we're doing and by the actions that we take and by the words that we say, then they're going to sense that, and they're going to go, I don't know who this guy is or this gal is, but all right, I'll come to your church. I'll engage you. I'll listen to you. People oftentimes listen, especially with food and especially with if you love them, but they sense that you love them. So, prayer, ask God for opportunities. All right? Ask God for opportunities. Very, very, very important. Be careful of your thought life. Okay, this is I talk a little bit about this in my book. And again, for me, I always assumed the worst of people. I always had negative thoughts. And so it prevented me from actually being a witness for Christ, because I would say, oh, they don't want to hear about the Lord. I would just assume that. But when you assume things, then you miss the opportunities that are right in front of you. You might say, they're just going to think I'm old fuddy-duddy, or I'm this or that, or whatever. And that's where you really have to get out of your head, and you really have to get away from that and go, you know what? The Lord loves me. The Lord cares about me. And you know, and we have a free grace message that is the world is dying to hear. And so that's one of those where you just really have to get away from that. All right? Oftentimes we come up with assumptions about ourselves that aren't even really true. And we base those assumptions or those thoughts on the way we grew up, on our experiences, both good and bad, the references that we get, and then that goes to equal our self-image or who we are, rather than what God sees us as. He sees us as we're God's creation, created in His image, and He loves us. And so if we have that thought of, well, I don't think they're going to want to listen to me, then yes, you're defeated even before you get started. All right, and you can't defeat yourself before you get started. You really have to get away from that. And I know for me, when I got away from that, I started seeing opportunities that happen on a daily basis, especially because I go to Starbucks all the time. So you never know what's going to happen when you put yourself out there. You have a routine. You go to the same places. You do the same restaurants. You do the same whatever, and you just love on people. Jesus did the same thing in Matthew chapter 9, verse 10. He ate with tax collectors, ate with sinners, and prostitutes. And people got a perception of him, but he just loved them because he knew that they were broken and that they needed a physician. And he was that answer. So I just encourage you all with that. We have the free grace message. It is so invaluable, so important. The world needs to hear that. And it's unfortunate that many evangelicals, millennials, they are leaving the church and they are finding the Catholic Church. And I thought that was really interesting that they've been going that route, going to a higher church, Catholic, Lutheran, more of that. Now, I couldn't find some statistics to prove that, but what I did find were there were numerous Catholic newspapers and online magazines and blogs that had talked about this problem or this issue. So when Rachel Held Evans made that point at the end of her quote of evangelicals are leaving the church, they are. They're going to the Catholic Church. Yeah.
That's really interesting because I've had the opportunity to lead a lot of Catholics to Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is because the Catholic Church pours guilt on them like
yep.
crazy. And
mm-hmm.
they're going there where they're getting guilt poured on them.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. A gentleman commented about the Catholics, mentally is going to Catholic churches and how what his experience has been and how, let's see if I can word this right, how the Catholics put guilt on individuals. And so why would millennials go to Catholic churches just to feel that guilt? Is that about right?
Because, you know, when you tell a Catholic about grace, they
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And I think that's right there is a great, statement, by the way. And I think part of the reason why millennials are going to Catholic churches is because they're tired of the big church movement and they're not getting answers there. They're seeing all this fakeness or this consumerism or all of that, and they're going, I don't want that. At least if I go to a Catholic church, that's real. Even if I don't buy into everything, I see, you know, the priest giving communion, and it's this, and it you know, the liturgy, and it just means something more, but in this way. It's formal, yes. So
we see more and more students going to liturgical churches.
Right.
Not just the Catholic churches, but anything, mm-hmm. like Episcopalian and those that are all liturgical,
oh, yeah.
because they have that feeling of reverence and
mm-hmm. Yes, a lady just commented about students going to more liturgical churches just because they see like the routine and like the high church. Yes.
As a millennial and as someone who awesome. Works a ton with millennials, say mm-hmm. with college students, I think a root of a lot of these things that we're talking about with millennials is the desire for authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. I think that is why they want passion. In their job. I think that's why they want you to be yourself. That's mm-hmm. why they want a church that's not a bunch of big band and lights and everything. And I think part of that is that millennials have been raised naturally skeptical.
Yes.
And so when you go to a church where it's not deep theology, it's mm-hmm. just seeker sensitive,
mm-hmm.
then they see a Catholic church
right.
or a liturgical church where they're not trying to cater to you.
Mm-hmm.
They are simply doing the things they think are right.
Right.
And so whether or not we agree with that those things are right, they see, okay, at least these people are authentic.
Yes.
And I just as a millennial sometimes feel that there's a misunderstanding of the motive that is behind millennials
mm-hmm.
from other generations.
Yes, absolutely correct. I'll just summarize what Tyler said. Basically, millennials are seeking the authenticity and they want that. They're tired of being, I guess, just, I guess, advertised to. And the church does, and I say church as a generalization, does that a great job of that. So, yeah, thank you for that, Tyler. I appreciate it. Well, that is all that I have. I'll open it up to questions. If you do have a question, if you're able to write it down, that would be great. That way I can repeat it up here. I'll take any of those. If not, I can just repeat it, I guess. Either one. I'll just repeat it. Fine. That's fine. Yes, Paul.
I keep hearing people use this word authenticity.
Right.
That's what millennials are looking
mm-hmm.
for. What is that?
Okay, what is authenticity? I would say it's being real, being yourself. Oftentimes, I remember growing up in youth ministry, and I would go to like a Campus Crusade for Christ event, and I felt like that guy that was leading it, God bless him, I was trying to always sell me on something. Hey, you got to come here. Hey, you got to hear this. Yeah, it's going to be the awesomest thing. And I kept thinking, no, I don't want to be a part of that. I don't need you to sell me. But if you had come alongside me and had been like, Dan, you're a great guy. Thanks for coming here. It's and been not like he's trying to be really hyper or something, you know, that would have. So I guess that's the best for me to explain that, you know, and especially if you get to this, some of these larger churches, it can get into a performance where they have the lighting and everything's just so and everyone's well rehearsed. And, you know, some people like that.
Yeah.
All right. It is a performance. It is, yes. Touche, touche. It is a performance. Yeah.
I think part of what you're saying about, like, you like to wear flip flops, so you wear flip flops.
Right.
Someone else might like to wear a suit, they wear a suit.
Totally.
And I think that can be translated to other aspects of mm-hmm. if it's a church where the worship director is really good at guitar or something,
right.
then jam out. But if
right.
And I think that part of it is that they can sense when people are doing something that they're not, that's not them.
Right, right. Oh, totally. Like, I remember I remember a pastor that would dye his hair. And he was beyond the age. And if you want to dye your hair, that's fine. I get it. I understand. And I love the guy. And he was trying to not be a stumbling block to people. I understand why he was doing it. However, I love to give him grief for it. So if your hair's gray, let it be gray, you know. If you want to color it, I understand. I've colored my beard before, so I'm not one to talk. All right. Yes, ma'am.
Well, it seems like they're very highly educated.
Yes.
You know, and they, a lot of people I work with have been to college. They know a lot. But then when it comes to Bible, they don't want teaching there.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you move someone from just wanting experience and doing
right.
service
okay.
to learning and being still with God?
Mentorship, mm-hmm. relationships. And that's why I was just talking about the eating together and really taking somebody on your, just really actually taking it upon yourself to go the extra mile and to say to them, hey, I'll text you. Or, you know, if you can give them a phone call, I guess. But just to go the extra mile and to pick somebody out, ask God to lay someone on your heart and go the extra mile and say, hey, I'd love to take you out for coffee and just get to know you. No strings attached. And go out to coffee and get to know them and say, well, this is a blessing. Would you like to, you know, do this again? And I'm trying to make it very casual, and it can be that. But when you build that relationship up to the point where then if they do have questions, you can say, hey, would you like to be in a mentor program? Would you like to? And when I say a program, I'm really meaning it can be anything, all right? You can talk to your pastor. You can get some resources there. You can go online. You can get. I had this little booklet that was called Operation Timothy. I used it. I got it from my pastor. Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, you can do any number of things. But again, it can also be very casual, because if you are 1 Peter 3:15, you're ready. Then you can just ask them their opinion on certain things. So.
Was it an orange yellow?
Kind of, yeah, it was an orange yellow. Oh, they have? CBMC? Christian Business. Okay, Christian Business Men's Committee. That's what he was talking about. Yes?
It seems to me that, and I agree, what I'm reading is that though the intentionality is only has to be on the side of the Lord.
The intentionality has to be on...
Walk up to,
right.
to you and say, would you...
Yes.
Let's go for coffee.
Right.
And that means the church, if the church is going to foster... Mm-hmm.
Yes.
My
yes. The church. Yes. So, from what Richard's saying is that the church needs to be intentional and its methods into mentorship. Yes, sir.
You mentioned statistics of the UK. That's where our ministry has been since 1980.
Oh, wow.
Or even before that, actually.
Mm-hmm.
About over half the people in the United Kingdom, not just millennials, say that they're mm-hmm. not religious.
Yes. Hmm. Interesting.
That they actually wouldn't, but that's what
right.
they said. They
yeah.
So, trying to get people to come to any kind of event.
Mm-hmm.
When I was first there, we could do that. It was in the church, like we used to take the old people to the seacoast on
mm-hmm.
the bus, you know, or a coach.
Yep.
They call it a coach. But anyway, and then by the end of that time, we couldn't get them to come on because mm-hmm. the church was sponsoring it.
Yep.
And so,
Mm-hmm.
That's what you mean about
intention. That's right. Yep. Why give a...
We also bring teams over, and we go door to door. You can do that in the UK a lot easier than you
okay.
can in the US, because the doors are mm-hmm. like right here, right there, right there. They're all mm-hmm. close together.
Yep.
You don't have to walk a half a mile to get to the next door. Mm-hmm. Or put someone's dog in the front yard that's going to bite. You don't have front yard.
Yes.
But, you know, we try to train the people that come with us. Like, first of all, you got to be willing to
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing, the next thing is you've got to connect.
Right.
And that's about building some sort of human trust. You know,
yeah.
Like, I say, hey, I'm Wyatt, this is my friend.
Mm-hmm.
Tyler's going with us this summer.
Yeah.
Tyler, and we're Americans, but we're not Mormons or Jehovah's Witnesses. They kind of look at you like, what? And they say, also, we're not here to get any money off of you. And they go, what? And then I say, well,
yeah.
We're really here because we just love your weather.
Right.
That's a big joke. Because
oh, yeah.
Always, the weather is just constantly
right.
changing. But if you get them to laugh, you can kind of bring down.
Absolutely.
You'd be mm-hmm. even a minimal amount.
It does.
And if you can see that they can see you're a human being, you're not just
absolutely.
Kind of, and then start asking them questions
mm-hmm.
To engage. That's the best form of evangelism, I think, is ask the right questions.
Absolutely. Knowing, yes, asking the right questions. I agree with that. Wyatt brought up a lot of great points in there. And when we talk about intentionality, we talk about people going and sharing the Great Commission, going and sharing Acts 1:8, going out and sharing their faith. But you also have to, you can't just engage them, you have to connect with them. And that's a huge, huge issue, huge thing.
I modeled a church for the last 200 years that did attraction.
Mm-hmm.
Attraction model.
Yeah. The attraction model.
So we're yep. all here growing mm-hmm. up with an attraction model. Like, come to us. Come
right,
to us.
Right.
We got this going. We got mm-hmm. that going. Come to us. Come do this. Come see that. Whatever.
Yep. Absolutely.
It's getting to the point where if we don't start going,
yeah.
where we're
going to
be.
We do need to go. We got to start going. Mm-hmm.
I had someone who really challenged me to rethink my approach to discipleship.
Yeah.
Because I had a little sign-up sheet, like, who wants to be a disciple?
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be a disciple, come write your email. I had, like, two people. So.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, I want to disciple people, but no one's coming to me.
Right.
And someone pointed out, well, how did Jesus do it?
Right.
And he walked up to people and said, hey, follow me.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know why they were going to follow him. They didn't know what he was
right.
about. But over time, he built a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so it kind of turned it on its head for me. And now the way I do it, and it's kind of like what both of you guys are talking about, is
mm-hmm.
finding someone and saying, hey, let's get coffee.
Right.
And then you get to know them, and you ask them, hey, tell me your story. Are you
right.
a Christian? How'd you come to faith? And then over time, you start giving them the same material
mm-hmm.
that you would have otherwise in a formal relationship.
Right.
But to them, it doesn't feel formal.
Exactly. That's a great point, Tyler. Making it not formal. And you build a relationship over time, not day. Hey, everyone, if you want to sign up for our discipleship program, go to this web, you know, that's, it is, yeah. And that, they're definitely not transactional individuals. Yes, Jesus was very, very relational. Mm-hmm. Listening is huge. They want to be heard,
yeah.
And they don't want to feel judged. Even though you may disagree with either a lifestyle or you may disagree with something, that can be something you can address after you've gotten their trust. Because the trust is the huge thing. When you get their trust, then you can start little by little sharing your opinion about that. Yes, Amy. Sure.
We didn't have a great response this first time. We just started it, but it has exceeded anything that we imagined that God would do with it. We just, probably most importantly, we've seen that they see that they trust us,
mm-hmm.
the moms, the older
right.
men.
Right.
You know, the people they see, you know, every day, but it's been amazing that we have already seen them making life decisions that they would have never made
mm-hmm.
a few months ago.
Yeah. That's great. That's great. Thanks, Amy, for sharing that. She just talked about how they had a formal sign up and then it didn't go as well, and then they had an informal and saw some really positive results from that. There was a story of a missionary that I knew in France, and he was there for about 10 years and then decided to come home for his wife. She had some health issues. And one of his friends that he had, because the French, they're very opposed to God and religion, And he had built up this relationship over time that one of the Frenchmen, that one of his friends came up to him and said, "You Americans, you come over here and you stay for only a short time." And it was interesting. He referred to 10 years as a short time. And they're very much community, and so it does take time to basically earn their trust. And I just kind of apply that to millennials in the sense that when you're trying to engage them, it is going to take some time to build their trust. But the more you're there, the more you're patient, the more you're gracious, really our free grace theology, the more you are that, the more you are going to build that up, and the more that you're actually sincerely interested in their life and what's going on. And definitely, I believe anybody, any age, can have a huge impact in others' lives. It's just coming down to, do you think you can? Well, actually, I'll just say this. There's a quote by Jim Rohn who says, "Whether you think you can or you think you can't, either way, you're right." So there you go. Yes, ma'am.
Sure.
Sure. Yeah, it does. I think the question, let me see if I can paraphrase it, is millennials don't necessarily understand the Bible as well, and how can we help them to understand the Bible? Is that...
to realize that you don't have to have somebody with the
doctorate. Right, okay.
You can actually read it. And
yes.
Study it.
Millennials can actually read the Bible themselves and understand and interpret. What can we do about that? Part of the reason why millennials are like that is because it could be the churches they attend. You know, maybe the church, maybe it's a mega church, and so they're not really learning Bible content, so they haven't grown up with that. Or maybe, the Sunday school program or whatever wasn't very engaging, and so... I lost students' interest very quickly, so they didn't learn those tools. Some of those could be the possibilities. Others could be maybe they just always thought the Bible's that. How can I understand it? It's such a big book, and so it's intimidation. And then there's always, like, science. Some students, they've been, I don't want to say brainwashed, but they, for lack of a better word, been educational system has taught them one way, and they elevate science above the Bible. And so they've kind of looked at it and been like, whatever. I'll just go to this Catholic church because at least that's respect the history or the liturgy. What are some ways we can do? I think it really keeps coming back to that relationship that you build with somebody. And I would look at it as a mission field, personally, because that's what it is. I mean, you're talking another language now, and we get into our Christianese of. Saying I accepted Christ, it's just a Christianese, whatever, it just means believe in Jesus Christ for eternal life. So it can have a lot of different meanings, I should say. So, but you can have an impact just on a personal level.